This is the Windy City pregame show for a welcome to Hoffman Estates in the Sears Center Arena for tonight's matchup between the Windy City Bulls and the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. I'm Bernie Goen along with Joe Kesnick and Andrew Johnson. And gentlemen, after an exciting game last night, hopefully the win last night can carry to Windy City into some momentum tonight.
Absolutely. Fantastic game last night. Fantastic finish for the Windy City Bulls to get their first win on the season. High-scoring affair. First half and second half, we saw the Bulls just in a shootout throughout the game. Antonio Blakeney just one-upping himself each game. 44 points, franchise record he sets. Well, it seems like he's doing that every game. Just lighting it up. So keep feeding him tonight. We'll go over some keys of the game more a little bit later. But hopefully a strong lead into tonight's game for the Bulls.
Yeah, definitely a huge win last night for the Bulls. And they just need to come out swinging tonight out of the gate. Last night, Fort Wayne, they did not shoot many threes, I saw. So perimeter defense tonight should be a key thing for Windy City. They're going to need to defend it tonight. So that's one of my keys is they have to defend the perimeter tonight. Even though Fort Wayne didn't shoot May last night, don't leave him open.
And how about that Antonio Blakeney last night setting a franchise high for the Windy City Bulls in a great game he had. This after, you could say, I don't want to call it so much of a, you know, demotion, but it was. He got sent up. Been brought back down. I mean, he could have taken that sort of as a negative thing.
Right.
Instead, he went out there and played extremely well and was arguably the biggest reason they won that ball game last night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he got a little practice with the Bulls, comes back down, comes out firing as he usually does from all over the floor. He's got range from everywhere. So a great leader of the team, inspiration of the teammates. We were talking a little bit last night, too, though, about the contributions of Archie Diacono distributing the ball. Not a lot of assists for a lot of the players, a lot of the Bulls in the first half. Archie Diacono was definitely leading the way with that, getting the ball around, slowing the team down when you need to, getting that all-around game going. The guys need to remember it's not all about scoring to get to the next level. They got to show their all-around game too. So Archie Diacono, a good calming force on the team and getting the ball to Blakeney in the right spots, as well as his teammates doing that too.
I would give Archie Diacono the player of the game last night. Yeah, Blakeney had a big game, but Archie Diacono, he had how many assists last night? Like
10, I think he ended up with 10 or 11.
Ended up with 10. And just dishing out like that, taking the charge in the fourth quarter to draw a foul when he already
right.
had five.
Yeah.
Putting that on the line just –
those non-score sheet plays he made last night,
exactly.
Taking the charge, getting a steal, ended up getting brought back, but still just making the effort all around, hitting a big three. Some plays that might look small in a vacuum, but you look at the overall of the game, they were big contributions for the team as a lift.
Yeah, so just outstanding play by him. I'm looking for him to just continue that tonight. And, yeah, if he keeps doing that tonight, should be a great game for Windy City.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to move to the bigger team now.
Yeah, I was going to say.
What they did last night.
Yeah, they played, ironically, you could put it this way, the Indiana Pacers, which is the Fort Wayne Mad Ants, are the affiliate of the Indiana Pacers. And tonight, the Bulls, the baby Bulls, if you will, the Windy City Bulls, will be playing the affiliate of the Indiana Pacers and the Fort Wayne Mad Ants, an interesting name that they have out there between these two ball clubs. But last night, as you mentioned, Bulls-Pacers game, and, you know, the Bulls continue with those struggles out there, but that's what we expected out of this team, and quite frankly, that's what you want. You want a higher draft pick with the ballyhooed class that's going to be coming in
right.
the coming draft.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not a lot to expect from the Bulls this year, but with a team like the Pacers, you look at their roster, it's not super strong as far as NBA rosters go. They lose Paul George. They get Oladipo back for him. Not a lot of big-time players on that roster to get that big a loss at home. A little bit unexpected. I mean, I think that's what Bulls fans are looking for a little bit more is competitiveness, but still losses. I mean, you want to get that good draft position, but still competing in games. Getting blown out game after game, nobody wants to see that, the Bulls organization or the fans, I don't think. You don't want to see a full season getting blown out.
Yeah, they just need to improve everything right now. It's not really looking the best in Chicago, so yeah.
But do they?
A lot of work.
Are they motivated to improve? I mean, obviously improve game over game, but to make drastic improvements, are they motivated to do that, or are they happy with where they're at
right now?
Do you think
that is the question right now? And let's just see what the front office will do.
I would hope that their intention is to go out there and just suck this year. You know, Joe Madden said, you know, embrace, you know. You don't want to embrace the suck. In this team's case, you want to embrace that suck. You want to be bad. Look, I mean, NBA mediocreness, getting the eighth seed in the East or just falling short is terrible.
Right.
You're going to end up with the 14th pick, or you can get, in all likelihood, a sweep in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the Bulls, a sweep to LeBron James or a sweep to possibly the Boston Celtics with Kyrie Irving this year. You need to just be bad. You need to be bad to get a top three pick, or – that's how you change your franchise around, unless you get lucky and find someone somebody passes on. But now with the way the scouting departments are and all of this out there, you have the G League, for example, people seeing everybody out there, you need to be up there in the draft. That's really the only way, because the Bulls have proven time and time again they've not gotten any big game-changing free agents. I don't want to hear about Carlos Boozer. I don't
want to
hear about, like, Rip Hamilton. Those did not change your franchise. Those did not make you better. They need someone to, you know, they need their next Michael Jordan to come through, or their next LeBron James, you know, to go out there and get a supplemental piece like we'll see him tonight, a Horace Grant, as it's Dynasty Night. You need somebody like that.
Yeah.
A great night out at the Sears Center tonight with Dynasty Night. Horace Grant signing autographs. Come on out. Visit Horace. A key player of the first three-peat, a key cog in that machine. That's the kind of role players you're looking for to support a championship team, a workhorse like that. The Bulls are looking to get those top three picks. You're starting to see some college action of what these guys are going to do. Michael Porter Jr., guy from Duke, remind me his name.
Marvin Bagley,
yeah.
Third.
Yeah, he had a standout game last night to start off the season, given it's Elon. But, you know, he's getting off to a good start, and that's what the Bulls are looking for, to try to get that franchise-changing player. But as we've seen in the past, Gar and Pax, they're great at building a 7 or 8 seed. That's what they build. They lucked out a little bit with getting Rose in the draft, getting that high draft back with him. Overall, without that luck, they know how to build a 7 or 8 seed. Are they ready to take that next level to really find the best player when they have an early draft pick, or find that free agent? The free agent class is great in the off season. They're going to need a good draft pick. So are we ready to put our support behind Gar and Pax to get that done, or is there a change that needs to be made?
Well, if anybody knows the way I feel, I don't think that they can get it done. I mean, they've proven they can find a B-plus player here or there, but I really believe a lot of that was development from a guy like Scott Skiles, and development from a guy like Tom Thibodeau, who, again, I mean, we don't need to rehash old wounds. I don't think they had any business, you know, getting rid of him, but that's whatever. That's in the past, as they say now. We don't need to continue to go through that. Yeah, I don't think if they had the number one pick, I'm not sure they could identify who would be that player that could make all the difference that they could find in the, you know, draft, or find someone possibly out of Europe, because they've proven they really couldn't even do that either. Nikolai Mirotic has not been all that great for them. You know, they found
McDermott.
Trading. We can sit here and spend the next 3 hours talking about what they haven't done or done in the draft. You know,
right?
Heck, you can fill a whole day with that.
Yeah,
it's true. I mean, they need to. I mean, it's a cool question is, like, the rebuild, but do you trust the people who are doing it? Like, when the Hawks went through theirs, they had a guy, you know, and Dale Talon, who was there. Stan Bowman falling. There's been some question marks about him. Obviously, we know who the Cubs got on their side. The Bears are trying to do that with Ryan Pace. The difference was all of those teams made changes to get to where they did. What's the common denominator here? It's the same people who put you in this mess. Now you're asking them to all of a sudden wake up
to dig out
of
it,
bed and figure out what they're doing.
Right. It's been a long time coming to give them a chance to build a championship contender. The farthest they've gotten is the conference finals and not doing well in the conference finals. It's been a good litmus test. It's been a long run to try it out. I'm not sure I have that faith and they can build from here.
I don't have. I'll be honest. I'll put it right out there.
I agree
don't
with
have
you.
That faith. But
yeah, I think that they're at the point they just need to overhaul the entire front office. Just get rid of everybody and just start from scratch again.
But that's proven to be at the ownership level. Jerry Reinsdorf has not done that. If you look at even the White Sox, when he pretty much took over full control after the unmitigated disaster that was Ken the Hawk Harrelson and his half a year stint as the GM, it was followed by Larry Himes, who then went to the north side. Ron Shuler was there 12 years. Now, he did a good job, but, you know, he was there 12 years. Kenny Williams then still has a job as now, you know, president, I think, of the organization, you know, and Rick Hahn is now in there. So, I mean, with the Bulls, it was since he's owned it. Two guys have been, quote-unquote, the talent finders. It was Jerry Krause, and it was now John Paxson. That's been the two people. I mean, taking over for Rod Thorne, who was, of course, the one who drafted Michael Jordan. So there's been no change. Reinsdorf has owned that team since 1985. It has been the same. It's been two people, and then Gar Forman helping out. So you have had the three same people in the spots for over 30 years now, 32 years.
That loyalty has been there for the guys making the decisions. It hasn't been there for the coaches. Been a lot of coach turnover for Paxson. I mean, we talked about that and touched on that a little bit yesterday with the strife of, you know, starting those issues with Vinny Del Negro between Paxson and then Tibbs. And now you've got fights between players. It's a lot of mismanagement, mishaps going on, and yet Reinsdorf continues to stay loyal. Which is an interesting thing, that he's more loyal to those front office people than he has to the coaches.
Yeah, he will always take a front office guy side in these quote-unquote battles slash wars. I mean, think about it. They have a nasty habit. Tim Floyd was gone around Christmas. Bill Cartwright, like, around Christmas. Scott Skiles was, like, going early December.
Yeah.
I mean, it's shockingly Vinny Del Negro made it two seasons.
It's right around that time,
yeah. And I'm not trying to start your rumors out there that Fred Hoiberg is next, but it would be interesting, you know. I don't think Fred Hoiberg will last after this season. I really don't see that.
No.
And, I mean, are you going to go back to the Iowa State well again? I mean, they did that with Tim Floyd, replacing your most successful coach, and your second most successful one was also replaced. And to me, the most sickening thing was everybody said that was going to happen. How is it that all these PR people and all these insiders, you know, for ESPN, NBA TV, TNT, know what your franchise is going to do? That's not how it should be.
Right.
I mean, that's, to me, when they know that they're going to make this what we all thought was going to be a mistake, it turned into that mistake that happened. I mean, you got to do better than that.
That's all Forman. They can keep going to the Iowa State well over and over again. It's amazing. I did not see Hoiberg as the strongest choice when they made it, and I still don't see that. He's not creating that leadership that the young guys need, that structure that they need. That's a perfect example of this fight happening between Miritich and Portis. Obviously, somebody needs to step in. They're going at each other. They're battling for playing time. They're going back and forth. Somebody needs to step in and say, hey, guys, we're teammates here. Let's settle it down a little bit before this gets out of hand, which it ends up doing. Now you got a decision to make on who you're going to keep. You can't bring those two back, in my opinion, on the same floor in practice. That's just going to create tension amongst the whole team. That's going to be a detriment to development for sure. You got to make a decision on Portis. There's talk of them even getting rid of both. I don't love that. I'd rather just hang on to Portis. I think he's performed well. I think he's done his job. You know, there's a lot of reports that Miritich was egging him on to this for a while. Miritich hasn't fulfilled his promise, so send him on his way, in my opinion.
The only thing I would counter with that, though, you're sending a message. Talent will win over in a case of character there, because Bobby Portis is the one who threw that punch. Do you want to send it to me? Both go. Send a message. Send them both. Hey, less talent, less victories. You would think.
I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem getting rid of both of them. But you got to send some kind of message. You can't bring them both back is just a disaster, in my opinion.
Both of them. Well, real quickly, Joe, would be hard pressed to not mention it is Veterans Day, and we like to wish happy Veterans Day to all of the people out there that have served this country, are serving this country, and have paid the ultimate sacrifice. And given their life up or come back and not 100% shit from overseas and keeping this place safe. And I like to say thank you to all of them, especially in this time that's just been, quite frankly, just nuts and, you know, craziness, what's going on with the flag and all of that. You know, I want to say happy Veterans Day all year, and a special thanks to my late grandfather who served in World War II. I don't know if there's anybody out there you have like to spend a special shout-out to.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. I'd like to thank all the veterans, first of all, my father being one of them, Paul Kessick and both my grandfathers served as well. My father's actually hosting right now an event in Chicago. He went to West Point, hosting a couple of West Point cadets in town right now too. So thank you to him and my grandfathers as well, and all the veterans out there. We appreciate what you've done.
And also, one we're staring at right now, Bill Downing, a naval man. And I wished him an early one yesterday. I wish him that again today. So for all of you out there, thank you very much. And we get to do what we enjoy today, in a large part thanks to you. So up next, we're going to dive into the sport that keeps getting nuttier and nuttier. What is it? Find out next on the pre show from the Sears Center tonight as the Fort Wayne Mad Ants take on the Windy City Bulls. And a great job there, Joe, and welcome back to the pre-game show for the Fort Wayne City Mad Ants and the Windy City Bulls, or Fort Wayne Mad Ants and the Windy City Bulls. Bernie Goh and Joe Kesnick and Andrew Johnson joining us back. And guys, you mentioned at college football, we're now in that time of the year, down the stretch, some big games today, possibly some upsets that are brewing out there. What's some of the things on the scoreboard, Joe?
Definitely a huge upset brewing right now. As I just mentioned in the update, Auburn up on Georgia, 5.5 about left in the third quarter, 30-10, just dominating Georgia. So as we were talking about this week, a lot of people talk about this week, Auburn had their fate in their hands. They're matching up against Georgia, and they're going to match up against Alabama. They're showing their strength. They're showing their mettle against Georgia right now. So can they do that against the Crimson Tide, too? It's a big question mark with how this game is playing out right now. Blowing them out, not just battling with Georgia, but blowing them out.
They have a handy – they're beating them handily right now. And
yeah,
honestly, I could see the Crimson Tide falling in that game because it's at Auburn again.
Right, so, getting both at home.
Yeah, right now it's completely up for grabs.
Jared
Stidham. Could have both teams going into the – SEC title game with one loss. If Auburn beats Alabama, does that put them in the title game then?
Yeah, it would.
Wow. Because
they're similar records, and then that tiebreaker would go to Auburn because their only loss is LSU. It's similar to what they did the year of the return six.
Kick six.
The kick six, as they affectionately call it.
Yeah.
Incredible college football memory there, the
yes.
kick six.
One of my favorite memories ever.
So Auburn's sitting at 5-1 in the SEC right now. So an incredible score to look at today. A lot of other things happening around college football. Ohio State coming back strong, just dominating the Spartans.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by that. I was actually looking for Michigan State to get the upset in that game. I'm a little amazed that they played that badly. And Ohio State actually, they were sent a message last week at Iowa. They really received that message this past weekend, and they just came out to. They were out for blood this weekend.
Yeah.
There's no other way to say it. They were out for blood against Michigan State.
The Hawkeyes put a whipping on them. I'm sure it was not an easy week of practice.
No.
With Urban Meyer. This week he was taking it to them, and they're taking it out. Anything they were built up against Urban this week, they're taking it out on the Spartans today.
Well, for me, Ohio State is a team that you got to look at them as a favorite now in the Big Ten. You know, they with beating Penn State in that game they came back against, destroying Michigan State. I mean, they kind of slipped on themselves there by losing to Iowa, but they're in the driver's seat now by taking it to Michigan State. I got to think they're the favorites against Michigan coming up. Take care of
things
there, and I would put them as the big-time favorites against Wisconsin. I'm tired of hearing they're undefeated. Who have they played? The Big
Ten
West is a joke. It's an absolute joke.
Well, you're talking about Ohio State. You look at what Iowa did to Ohio State, and now they're beating Iowa by 10. How many times can we say that Wisconsin's just not getting it done when they're beating teams that are playing well against other good teams? I think it's a great win. If they come out 10-point win against Iowa, they're now in the fourth quarter up 10. If they come out 10 ahead of Iowa, I think that's a great frame for Wisconsin. You can't take that away from them.
I would say this is their first good win of the year. I'll even go as far as to say good. This is their first good win of the year. I'm saying right now at 9-0 coming in this game, their first nine wins, who have they beaten I mean, I was saying that, but I remember coming into your people were saying the Northwestern Wildcats, not exactly a power in football, saying if they can upset Wisconsin, and that was what it would have been an upset, they can go to the Big Ten championship. That's right. How down the Big Ten West is this year.
Yeah.
And it's been for the last three or four years.
Even Illinois, they took it to Wisconsin in that game in Champaign. I mean, I was blown away by how few rushing yards Wisconsin finished in that game. Illinois' rushing defense, which has been bad this year, I'm not going to say abysmal, but it has not been good by any means of the imagination. But they took it to them, and they stuffed a great Wisconsin running game. So Wisconsin is beatable. I don't see them going past the Big Ten title game, honestly. I think that they're going to get slaughtered by Ohio State in that game.
They should have blown out the Illini by more than they did based on what Illinois has done this year, but two touch. I wouldn't say Illinois taking it to them with losing by two touchdowns.
Yeah.
You had BYU. You know, they beat 40. That's the major debate: is are you factoring in teams? Is the committee factoring in teams where they were ranked when you played them versus where they are at the end of the season? That's the debate a lot of people are having of what they're weighting more on the scales of where they're at when you play them or where they're at overall on the results of the season. If you're looking at overall results of the season, Wisconsin's played nobody. Iowa is their first good win. But if you're looking at ranking per week, then they do have some decent wins throughout, with Northwestern being ranked during the year, too. So, interesting with Wisconsin. I think it'd be a great game if it ends up being the two of them playing each other. But I don't think you can factor them out in the college playoff right now.
That brings me to something interesting. I think that Northwestern being ranked now, they've beaten a few teams like an Iowa. But I think they got pushed into those rankings to make Wisconsin look better. That's something I've noticed that this committee is doing, and I got to give credit to Anthony Booger McFarland, who made this point, and it relates more to Alabama. Having all of a sudden LSU, who lost to Troy, is now ranked.
Right.
Yeah.
You have Auburn now, all of a sudden, if they can win out, they would be, because they're ranked, all of a sudden if they win out, I mean, it's to fluff up Alabama's resume, which quite frankly, other than Florida State, which has turned out to be a dumpster fire this year, that team, they have nothing that they can celebrate on their schedule. And I think they're seeing, but with Wisconsin and both Alabama undefeated, they're trying to prop them up with teams that, quite frankly, I don't think should be ranked there. So it's debatable to say, should we put a Northwestern in there? Certainly LSU should not be in there. You lose to Troy, to me, you should not. And that's, you have more than just that loss. You should not be in the top 25. To me, because nobody pays attention after 6, because they look at the next two that could go in. Nobody pays attention. So
right.
7 through 25, they just throw teams in there. Oh, yeah, that'll work, that'll work. And you know what? Well, we're sending a message, Georgia, you're number one because you beat Notre Dame. So they're glossing over the other mistakes they're making down the line with these teams, with teams that should not be ranked there.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of lobbying going on within the polls and within that committee room as far as lobbying for different conferences and trying to get pump up some schedules. I think that's happening.
Now, you keep mentioning the LSU lost to Troy. What about Clemson losing to Syracuse? Do you think that they should be in the top and where they are because of losing to Syracuse? I keep bringing that up, but a lot of people keep shooting me down with that argument. But I still go, I don't know why Clemson is number 4 right now.
They had an injury.
They shouldn't be.
In that game.
It's
a bad loss.
It was a Thursday. It was a
Friday.
It was a Thursday game.
No, it was a Friday night.
It was a short week. They're going to I thought it was a Thursday game. I could be wrong.
It was a Friday night.
It was
night.
A field goal, and it was at Syracuse. They're going to – I mean, it was in conference. That's the other thing. I mean, Troy is not, you know, in the SEC conference. At least
right.
Syracuse, while not a quality team, is not – I mean, they're going to – they'll forgive a conference loss, especially – like, if you see that some of these scores in the schedule, I mean, they beat Auburn, who – they have them ranked up there.
Right.
Louisville at the time was ranked very high. BC
they beat up on them.
Okay, but Virginia Tech at Blacksburg, a very tough place to play, beat them by 2 touchdowns. You know, Wake Forest, who's hung in there with some other teams. That Syracuse loss is a great, but Georgia Tech, I mean, everybody else on the schedule, they beat them by 14. I think that's why the committee has shown they will forgive a loss. It's just it has to be the right loss. That Troy loss is – if Troy and Syracuse met, I would say Syracuse would win that football game.
You lose to Troy, then you beat Auburn, so
– yeah,
it's kind of hard to – you can kind of say that they made up for it by beating Auburn.
Yeah, I just – for me, I just don't feel like LSU belongs in I just find it magical that when they got moved in there, it was because all of a sudden, well, now Alabama beat them and you move in.
Auburn is shaking up everything right now with the fact of if they beat Georgia, then that pumps up Clemson too, though.
Yeah, it does.
So everything relates to each other.
So if Georgia loses to Auburn, now would you put Clemson in that top four, Andrew?
Yeah, I probably would.
They went to Auburn and won, right? They went to Auburn for that game?
I believe so, yeah. I can take a look at that. But yeah, just an amazing score when it's not just
– No, they hosted Auburn.
It
was their second game of the year, early on in the year, and you know the committee loves, which they should because I'm so tired of teams opening up with cupcakes. I mean, that was only their second game, but it was still early in the season. Yeah, for me, Clemson, just the eye test, I've seen a team for me that's top four in the nation. I believe that. I think I'm an Irish fan. That's my favorite team. I think Clemson should be ahead of Irish.
You do?
Yeah, I personally
really?
Believe that.
I don't. Look now at those schedules side by side. I like it if they both
when the rankings first came out, I should say, 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But also, I had Ohio State in there, and we saw what happened. There, obviously, I don't anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm going by – I just – Notre Dame did show me something when they beat up on it was NC State. That was
– Just crushed them.
Yeah, that was to me – that was finally where I started to say, okay, you know what?
Now maybe. They deserve it, yeah. That's the point where I said it, too, that once they beat NC State, I said, okay – they deserve where they are in these rankings after that. Before that, I was like, they're kind of stretching it. It was a little sketchy. But now I say, okay, they deserve to be there. If they lose to Miami tonight, though.
They're done.
Yeah, they're out of the
playoffs. That's going to be a huge hit if they do that. But, you know, USC not having a regular USC year, but that's a big rivalry game. That's a tough game.
Yeah, it's huge.
Pounding them is big. And then doing that back-to-back weeks against NC State. Then, you know, Wake was a little bit of an anomaly game, and they probably took their foot off the gas a little bit with Wake.
No, I don't have an issue with that. You were up by up by four touchdowns.
They were dominating.
And they scored two late touchdowns.
Right.
This isn't a BCS anymore where you got to win by point differential.
Late tack-ons.
So do you want them to act like, you know, the Hurricanes did in the 80s, like, and run up the score like Jimmy Johnson?
Exactly.
So I have no issue with that. I mean, now, if it was close, if it was 41-37 and Notre Dame backdoor covered at the end of the game, then I would say – that should be taken into account, but they dominated that game.
So you follow up that with a win at Miami, if that plays out that way. Now Stanford beats Washington. Stanford looks like a better opponent going into that last game.
Yeah.
You win out, I think, and Clemson wins out. I think the schedules line up with Notre Dame's favor.
Don't discount Navy, though.
Nope.
Because they
you can't.
Count out the midshipmen. Nope.
You can never look past Navy whatsoever.
That's a huge rivalry game for Navy. They love that game just as much as they love playing Army. You never want to count them out of a game.
They built their program up. Coach's name is escaping me right now, but he built his program up on the shoulders of beating Notre Dame.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're dangerous.
It was three times in 5 years they had defeated them after it was some 44 years when Starbuck was the quarterback the last time that Navy had defeated them.
Yeah. Of course, thanks to Charlie Weiss.
I'd say the wonderful end of the Charlie Weiss era. But Brian Kelly's lost to them twice, too.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I mean, not defending Charlie Weiss, but. I mean, yeah, the Navy is not that pushover, that guaranteed win that it used to be late in the year. You know Notre Dame, if you remember back in 2012 when they went all the way to the national title game, they had that hiccup coming off that beautiful win against Oklahoma. They were playing Pittsburgh. People said, this could be the trap game, and it was.
Yeah.
And they escaped out of there, you know, by the skin of their
barely.
Teeth.
Barely. I do remember that one.
So this could be where that is again.
I could talk about that game all day. I almost threw my roommate's TV out the window during that game. I was so angry when I think the refs gave that game to Notre Dame. That last touchdown, I will always say, did not get in.
So were you happy that what Alabama did to them in the
– Oh, yeah. I was very happy when Alabama steamrolled them and made them – made the nation see how good Notre Dame actually was, which was not very good. They just got lucky, and they had a really soft schedule that season.
Well, since you're not obviously a fan, we'll ask your opinion first so people don't think we're biased. Is Notre Dame only in there because of the financial reward they can bring, or do they legitimately belong, would you say, in the top four? We'll go with if they win tonight against Miami. Should they be one of the four teams in?
Ask me that if they win or lose. Losing by only one to Georgia, that spoke volumes about how good they are. Blowing out NC State, that speaks another volume about how good they are. So, yeah, right now I do think that they belong there. If they lose tonight,
no, I'm not,
they
yeah,
have
I'm
no
saying,
shot.
Yeah. If they lose, I'm just saying if they were to win out.
If they were to win out, yeah, I'd put them in the playoff.
Because here's what
don't count out those last few games because Stanford and Navy and who's the other one?
It's just Stanford and Navy. Just, they don't have a conference title game. So.
Yeah, right. Those two, you just – it's a tough stretch for them. If they lose one of these next three games, they're out. If they win out, put them in.
So do I always question with Notre Dame, though, as of late with the college football playoff, that conference championship puts an exclamation point on a lot of seasons. If you can have a big win against a big team, they don't have that. So does that potentially knock them out of the four, even with winning out a conference championship game?
I think if you had four, no doubt, conference champions that just, you know, ran – and I'm not saying you had to be undefeated, but four – like last year, Clemson and Alabama clearly looked like the two best teams.
Yeah.
Say if you had if Washington was that, you know,
I
more
think
impressive
Notre Dame,
head and shoulders above everyone else, and Notre Dame wasn't undefeated, I think you can make that case. But in this case, you don't have either four undefeated teams or four locks.
I think Notre Dame
will
beat out the Big 12 or the Pac-12 team.
I agree with that.
That makes it. I think they have a better bid than the winner of those two conferences.
Yeah, Washington's sitting at two losses now with losing
winner,
to Stanford last night.
They have a shot.
Yeah, but I don't think the Big Ten's done. I really do. I mean, because Ohio State, unless the only chance to me is Wisconsin, if they've got to run the table, and then they've got to put it on what it looks like it'll be Ohio State in that Big Ten championship. Mm-hmm. If they don't do that, I don't see how the Big Ten sends a team. I'll tell you what, if Wisconsin barely squeaks by in that game, I don't even know if they would. They got to show the committee something because
they need to blow out Ohio State to make it.
They do need some big wins.
They need
wins.
To do what Ohio State did to them when we first had the playoff 3 years ago where they beat them like 55-0, and everybody said, whoa, okay, you belong in over TCU or Baylor, and then Ohio State went on to win the whole thing. That's what Wisconsin needs to do to get into the Final Four, unless we just have chaos coming. Notre Dame has a second loss. You know, all of a sudden Georgia falls again. Maybe Clemson falls again. They need something else to happen somewhere for them to get in.
I'm distracted by that voice right now. That is a great-sounding voice. I wonder who that is singing the practicing for the anthem right now.
It's Veterans Day. You got to bring a strong voice to the anthem today.
Definitely. This is amazing right now. Can't deny that.
Well, up next, we're going to talk a little bit more college football and the rivalry that will happen tomorrow. That is a must-win for one of those teams. It's not the team you think it is. You're listening to the Bulls pre-game show from the Sears Center on SportstownChicago.com. And welcome back to the Bulls pre-game show. And now we're going to head over to Joe for our 5:30 update.
Hey, at 5:31, this is Joe Kesick with your SportstownChicago.com update. In college football, top 25 today. Another shootout in the Big 12 with number 15, Oklahoma State, outgunning number 21, Iowa State, 49-42. Number 13, Ohio State, crushed number 12, Michigan State, 48-3. And number 10, Auburn, is leading Georgia, 30-7 in the fourth quarter. Coming up at 7, third-ranked Fighting Irish take on 7th-ranked Miami Hurricanes at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. The Bears are still holding as a three-point favorite in their matchup with a banged-up Packers squad tomorrow afternoon at Soldier Field. Linebacker Danny Trevathan was out of practice this week with a calf injury. Tight end Deion Sims was out with an illness, and cornerback Bryce Callahan was out with a knee injury. Center Cody Whitehair has been a full participant after injuring his elbow versus the Saints. Tight end Ben Broniker was elevated from the practice squad after tight end Zach Miller was placed on IR. In the NBA, Chicago has been named the host for the 2020 All-Star Game. The Bulls fell to the Pacers last night, 105-87. They fall to 2-8 on the season. Winnie City Bulls take on the Fort Wayne Mad Ants at the Sears Center in Hoffman States tonight. Tickets can be purchased at WinnieCityBulls.com. With your SportstownChicago.com update, I'm Joe Kesnick.
And thank you, Joe, for that rousing rendition of
absolutely
the update. Sticking with college football a little bit more. You had mentioned this earlier in the fist fight we had before the show about expanding the playoffs potentially. Your thoughts on that? I know you don't think that there should be four teams just in the playoffs.
I think there's definitely room for a couple more teams year over year. I think we can go to six, and I think we can go to six teams. I think there's a way to do that. You create kind of a wild card program with just an extra game in there. You can expand with the Bulls. We've got enough Bulls to get to a 16 playoff. You give a first round bye to the top two seeds, and you got a little more a draw. I mean, it's work for baseball. You're drawing a little more of the country in to the potential of the playoff at the end of the season. Four just feels a little light to me. I think six would be a good number. Expanding it beyond six, I don't necessarily like. You can go too far with it, but I think six is a good round number.
Yeah, I completely agree with that as well, and I'd like to see it, you know, like Joe just said, first round bye for the top two teams, have the bottom two teams that make it in, those the five and six teams play, like, I don't know, probably the Pinstripe Bowl and the Texas Bowl. Or maybe an earlier one. Like, what's the first bowl game usually?
Like the Las Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, like, I don't know if you want to really do the Las Vegas Bowl, but a big one. Like, I'd say the Texas Bowl, that's a pretty good mid-level bowl. They play it at Reliant Stadium down in Houston. And then, you know, I don't know what the second one should be.
You're talking about for the opening round?
Yeah, like, for five and six to play.
I think you can use bigger bowls. I mean, you've got the Peach, you got Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, probably the Peach Bowl, yeah.
You got Fiesta, you got Rose.
Yeah.
You got plenty of big-time bowls to still to round out of those games.
You want to have one that's, I'd say, early enough for those two to play, then have a few weeks to prepare for your second-round game, the New Year's Day game, to take on the one and two seeds.
See, I think the sponsors of the bigger bowls would want to be associated with the playoffs.
Yeah.
More, they would be willing to necessarily move the date of the game to be associated with the playoffs instead of the weird rotation we have going on. Sometimes the Rose Bowl is not even associated with the playoff.
Yeah.
They're getting phased out. It just becomes an irrelevant Rose Bowl game. I don't like that. I think you can integrate all the top bowls.
They want to keep it the Big Ten runner-up and the
Pac-12
runner-up or winner, whatever. You know, they want to keep that tradition going when it's not a playoff game, which I'm totally for because that's the way it's always been, and I like that tradition of it being Big Ten and Pac-12. Going at it for the Rose Bowl. So
I think you got to let
go. I think they should keep it like that for a while at least.
I think that they can keep their parade. It's still a great traditional stadium, one of the most beautiful stadiums in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's never going to go away. People are always going to have that draw.
Oh, yeah.
The Rose Bowl game, but hanging on to the conference affiliations, I think it is days gone by. I mean, it's all about the playoffs right now. I think it causes some irrelevancy when it's not involved with the playoff.
It really just depends on the matchup.
I would leave it at four right now. I really would. I think that you have – it's great. It's great theater. It has the regular season mean something. I was the one who was screaming mostly for a playoff. I don't want to see eight teams.
No.
I think eight teams waters it down.
I agree.
If I absolutely was pushed to the brink and said you had to expand, I would go to six. And I wouldn't automatically make it be you're a conference champion that you get in still. I would take – the six best teams, but I would open it up to everyone. So here's an example. Toledo, you know, if they win their conference, they're undefeated. They have a couple of, you know, big-time wins on their schedule that they beat. I would open it up to them. And, I mean, Boise State years ago when they had it. To me, they were one of the teams that should have been in the BCS conversation.
Yes.
They went to Virginia – they went to Washington, D.C., and they won, at you know, against Virginia Tech and was a virtual home game. You know, at FedEx Field. They played Oregon State, who was ranked that year. I think they defeated Oregon as well that year. They need to expand that. They need to expand it to everybody. You don't have enough teams. Therefore, you don't have people want to say, well, you know what, you should have all the teams from every conference coming.
From a conference champion.
Yeah, you want to see somebody from, you know, the Mountain Athletic Conference get in. I mean, but if they're deserving, should we just send them because automatically to sort of get slaughtered by someone, you know?
See, that kind of leaves that wild card for that sixth team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the Power Five.
I wouldn't even just narrow it to the Power Five. If you have two teams in one conference that are better, send them. And right. Yeah. The conference winner, give them the higher seed and a potential bye. The other I think if you're to do that, but right now I don't think we're seeing enough of that. I think we're seeing too much favoritism in this. It shows it by what we said earlier with LSU. So right now I'd leave it at four because otherwise we're just going to see more favoritism. They need to make it a better committee. You almost maybe go to a computer system again with one person maybe controlling it to pick those teams or something, or you have people just are more willing to look at it because right now I think it's just way too much favoritism out there. We're going to rank teams
too much SEC biased.
Not so much that. Now, I would say, I mean, they're kind of doing that to prop up Alabama, but, I mean, you could say that with Notre Dame. They're saying, oh, you know, the financial benefits coming in there, all these other teams. I think that you need to, if you're going to do that, and leave it at six then, because eight, after you get through, I feel like there's not been too many years in college football where after the first five, six teams, you had teams that legitimately were national champion contenders.
Yeah. I totally agree.
I agree.
I feel like some years you have teams that were even debatable of like whether they should be in the four. Sometimes you're going to feel watered down by the fourth. So, yeah, getting to eight, I think you're going to have some teams that just maybe not have earned it as well as six.
And for me, if you're going to go to six, it's simple. You have these six bowls right now. Make it to, you know, the Cotton Bowl, the Peach Bowl, or maybe your quarter, or your, as you said, your wild card games. You know, your next four is – for the next four teams, the Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl potentially, you know, and you have as well
or the Sugar Bowl.
The Sugar Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl. They play for those other four games, and then you have your championship game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I would look at – I mean, but I agree. I hate that. And this was something I did agree with, and I was as playoff as anyone, the Rose Bowl becoming a quarterfinal game, and that's what it's become.
Yeah.
The Rose Bowl should, to me, be the championship game. I mean, I know why they move it around more money. That's, to me – to me, the Rose Bowl should be the venue that the national championship games always played at. You could have then the Orange and Cotton Bowl being at the oldest bowls be your semifinal games, and from there, you know, a Peach Bowl or something like that. Because most of the time, the weather's pretty nice in L.A. that time of the year.
Yeah.
You don't really have to worry about weather becoming a factor in outdoor stadium. And the rest of it, you play it indoors, so it is neutral. You know, you have Atlanta for the Peach Bowl. Orange Bowl, again, usually the weather's pretty nice down there.
I think that they like having the tile game in pro stadiums because usually is – most of them are bigger.
Yeah, it's a cash grab. But, I mean, the Rose Bowl is huge, and it's hosted Super Bowls. But it's a cash grab. That's all it is.
Yeah.
They put it, you know, they put it in Tampa. They put it in Arizona. Jerry World was the first one. You know, they're going to have it, I'm sure, in L.A. down the street, you know, by LAX Airport where the new stadium is being
built. They put that new one in.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll have a national championship game there.
Probably Vegas when that opens, finally.
Yeah.
If they can ever get a plant or final, the paperwork to go through for that, there's so many problems getting that thing off the ground. It's not even funny.
It's interesting, though. We got to talking about it today. I feel like there hasn't been a lot of expansion talk this year. There hasn't been much at all for expanding the playoff. You usually hear it drums up this time of year. You're not hearing much this year.
Other than right now, the clear cut, it looked like, but they're losing 33-10. Georgia was the clear cut, and, of course, Alabama. After that, it's a lot of muck. And I think people don't want so much muck, and they're fighting over what four we should already send. That's why I say the four is fine now. One question I have for you guys, Greg McElroy, the former quarterback at Alabama, brought this up. He said, by no means, he did not care if Georgia-Alabama was the greatest game we had ever seen in the SEC championship. He did not want to see a repeat of those two teams playing each other. Would you not want to see that either, or do you think if it's a close game, send them both if they're deserving?
That's a tough one.
He said
if they come out of the season ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, send them both. Why not?
I don't think we're going to have to worry about that.
Well, I'm just saying if it was something obviously that's going to go by. And I said that too. That's why I didn't really care and didn't give it much thought because I thought they were going to slip up somewhere before this. And it looks like they're going to do that. For me, I mean, I think if they're the two best teams. No, granted, though, I was the one screaming up and down. I didn't want to see Alabama-LSU again, which when we had that, it's a repeat, and that's why we ended up getting this 14 playoff. I see his side, though, where win your conference, and he's saying it would devalue the conference championship game. That, to me, he's absolutely spot on about. It would devalue that conference championship game if you know pretty much, just keep it close. We're going.
Yeah,
I do agree with him there.
Yeah, but Auburn's stretching out their lead right now
on
Georgia.
But I thought about it, too, in the point he was making. You talk about teams like, you know, in the NFL or the NBA, Major League Baseball, that if they don't have a wild card and if they lose to a team like the Pittsburgh Pirates were this. You know, they lost to the Cubs in a play-in game. Mm-hmm. A lot of people would have said you should have gone in, but you had teams with lesser records that went ahead of them. I guess it's just bad luck for you, Georgia or Alabama, if you weren't to beat your undefeated counterpart on a neutral field. You knew you were getting in. So I see that point, and it would make those championship games more. So it's interesting that we don't need to really talk about it anymore. And real quick, Andrew, you had an update out there that's it's getting interesting in a game.
Yeah, the 17-14 for Clemson over Florida State, but it looks like Clemson's in position to score their second in goal at the Florida State one.
They're knocking on the door.
Yep, they're about to blow the door open, it looks like. Actually, 1 yard line, that's you're about to hit the detonator to blow the door wide off the right off the hinges.
Yeah, it's right. That's probably wrap the game up if they can punch it in here. Florida State being game. There we go. Touchdown,
yep,
Clemson.
Touchdown, Tigers.
So they're stretching that out. A good rally by Florida State to try to salvage something of their season.
Yeah, but, and that's a huge rivalry game too for those two schools. From what I understand, it's been a big rivalry between them, especially recently for the for the ACC title game.
It's been kind of the de facto championship game,
right?
When you think
about
it.
Been the cream of the crop for the ACC for a while. When the ACC had their down years over the last decade, it was Clemson and Florida State carrying the flag.
And it's,
for the conference.
And you could make the argument right now, top to bottom, they're the best conference football-wise now in the country. They certainly were last year.
They built some depth.
It kind of bounces around. Of course, one of those heavy hitters, Florida State, is not that anymore. So it gets interesting between these teams. Well, coming up, we will jump into that rivalry game and the team that needs to win it the most. You're listening to the pre-game show for the Windy City Bulls from the Sears Center on SportstownChicago.com. And live from the Sears Center, this is the Bulls, Windy City Bulls pregame show. We're going to go along with Joe Kesnick and Andrew Johnson. And gentlemen, tomorrow, the rivalry that never stops. They've taken the lead for the first time since 1932. We're talking about the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears. But, of course, the ultimate wild card in this one, Aaron Rodgers not playing in the game. Brett Hundley out there. For me, this is a no-brainer. John Fox and company, you have to, at home,
you have
coming
to
out of a bye
game.
Week, you have to win this game. It's a fireable offense if you don't win this football game.
I completely agree with that statement. My mom is a diehard Packers fan, and all of her family up in Wisconsin, diehard Packers fans, so she raised me to be one. I became a Colts fan after watching Peyton Manning, but yeah, I cannot deny that this is a must-win for John Fox if he wants to spend another day as the Bears head coach. This is do or die for him in his career.
You can't be set up any better. They are limping in to Soldier Field. You can't be set up better to finally take your rival down, something they haven't been able to do over and over again over the past year, just getting dominated in multiple games. Fox has had enough time. Fox and Pace have had enough time to put together some talent on this team. It's about time to see it come to fruition a little bit. We talked about this a little bit earlier in the week on a show I was on as well. Is he being too conservative for his own good with Trubisky? Does he need to take the training wheels off a little bit to preserve his job? Is he trying to preserve his job by being conservative, and is he losing his job by being too conservative?
Well, he's been – the hallmark of him has been that he is conservative when you think
right.
about it. Even back in the days with the Carolina Panthers and Jake Delhomme, he liked to run the ball with Steven Davis back in the day, and then with Jonathan Stewart, D'Angelo Williams. He has shown he wants to run that football. They did it against the Baltimore Ravens, and everybody forgets because of the Hail Mary by Joe Flacco that all of a sudden people were like, oh, yeah, the Peyton Manning choked again. He took the ball out of Peyton Manning's hand, and they were running the football out there.
Right.
So that's to me another indictment of John Fox, who does get too conservative. I think he's gotten a bad rap. I mean, he inherited a mess here, and
absolutely.
I think he's done a good
job.
He
really did.
He took a team with Tim Tebow to the playoffs. He took Denver out of the wilderness. People forget the Carolina Panthers were 1-15 when he came there. Has the game passed him by? I would say maybe a little bit, but I think overall he's done an admirable job, at least defensively. Now offensively, yeah, he's always been that way. He's been conservative. And unless he's willing to get rid of Dow Loggins and bring someone in who's willing to open it up a little bit, to me, you've got to maybe look elsewhere to find another head coach.
You're not going to see the development with Trubisky if you don't give him a chance. I mean, outside of this game, this opinion that I have of you've got to let Trubisky open it up a bit to develop. He's not going to really find his groove unless you do that. I'm fine with them not doing that in this game. Do what you got to do to win in this game. If you got to run the ball, I want to see this win happen. Fox wants to see this win happen. The whole city of Chicago wants to see this happen. So do what you got to do to get through this game. After that, the wins don't really matter. You want a high draft pick, the same as the Bulls. You want a high draft pick. So developing Trubisky is more important than winning after this week.
Yeah, this definitely it's you're coming against the worst Packers defense that anybody has seen in a few seasons. I mean, you could argue that they've been about the same level with Rodgers just bailing them out more often than not. But, yeah, they're decimated by injuries, no depth either, and Dom Capers finally is showing that he's not a good defensive coordinator and he needs to get fired. So that's really – everything is in the Bears' favor right now. If they lose this game, I wouldn't even show up on Monday. I would just start packing.
Well, I'm not
leaving.
I'm saying that you accomplish nothing if you fire him Monday. I mean, if Mark Trestman survived the season, which I agreed with, you had to fire Aaron Kromer because he made a jackass out of himself out there. He needed to go.
Right.
But other than that, you solve nothing. Who you let him go at the end of the season if you don't agree with him. Or another idea, let him play out his lame duck season and see next year if you do have more talent. Ryan Pace, you think you have enough talent. For me, the jury is still out on Ryan Pace. I mean, if Mitchell Trubisky turns into a bust, and we don't know yet one way or another what's going to happen, the little bit I've seen him, I'm obviously not an expert, the little bit I've seen, yes, he's not had a lot of talent, but I thought that last game he took a major step back against the Saints. He missed on some throws. He had a couple of questionable decisions that could have been intercepted, one that was. He had a nice throw, unfortunately, didn't count to Zach Miller. Outside of that, I mean, again, I saw him at North Carolina the little bit I did, and I wasn't impressed with him all that much there. I did not understand for the life of me, if you're going to take a quarterback that high, it was sitting right there, same conference. The man who twice almost led his team to a national title did it once against arguably the greatest college coach of all time. Why did you not draft him? And the thing they've been talking about.
The greatest college defense.
Yeah, they've been talking about lately. Was this the reversal for the Bears, Sam Bowie, over the beloved Michael Jordan, just that the Chicago team's the one taking the equivalent of Sam Bowie? Let's hope it's not that.
I'm not ready to say that yet.
I'm not either, but I'm just saying, could it be that case?
The travesty with Pace, to me, I would definitely have taken a wait-and-see approach with Pace, but the travesty with him is you go through all what you went through to get Trubisky. Then you go into a season with the lineup of receivers that he had. Even without the injuries, you're relying on Meredith and White to be your top receivers. A terrible decision to go in expecting, and then you get the injuries to them. I don't know how you're relying on White to begin with. He hadn't gotten through
why
a season
you drafted him
or shown
to
anything.
Begin with.
Right.
It was a that, system receiver.
That's a mistake in the first place. So to go in that with that core, even with those guys, you can't make excuses that those guys got hurt because even with that core, that's not a reliable core. Then you get those injuries, and this is what Trubisky's left to work with in his first season. How you go there as a GM thinking that those are the tools he needs to be successful if he does get in his first year. Don't even get me started on Glennon. I could go on for an hour on Glennon, but – yeah, I don't like what Pace did to set up Trubisky for success.
That was a great point by you, Joe. If he's evaluating Mike Glennon, and that's who he settled on as the guy to replace Jay Cutler. Why do you think that? I mean, again, it was because it was, I would say, very, I don't know, controversial, but very head-scratching to take Mitch Trubisky that high. Some people said, oh, he's the most polished product. Again, I don't know how you could say that when you had a guy who was winning national titles in the same conference that this man was, with the limited starts he had in college, the most polished guy out there. The other thing I look at, you know, the signing of Ray McDonald, that was terrible. You know, that should have never happened, and they got rid of him, luckily, in time. I mean, because the guy is just a piece of garbage off the field, let's be honest. Eddie Jackson, I mean, you got him. That was a nice move. But a guy like Adam Shaheen looks completely lost out there. That's another one that you look at and go, what was he doing there in that draft? I mean, the signing of, you know, Bobby Massey on the right tackle. You know, Charles Leno. I mean, sometimes I'd rather have Jay Leno out there blocking than Charles Leno. All these moves put together, I'd say, okay, you're better than Phil Emery, but that's not saying a whole lot.
No, it's
and,
not.
Not I mean, a great compliment.
I mean, I need to see more out of him, and to me, he's only – I'd give him maybe both one more year. And if I don't see significant change in the right direction next year, sorry, George McCaskey, it's time to clean house again.
Yep.
Once again. And just that, that's been the constant turnaround. The leadership, you got to go to the top. You look at the teams that are consistently there, the Steelers, competing, the Steelers, the Packers as well. The leadership is there to hire the right people to evaluate talent. You can't keep putting it on the GMs when somebody is hiring the GMs. You can say whatever you want about they're letting the GMs do what they can to build the team. They're letting the football guys do football. Okay, then hire the right football guys and bring actual winner to this city that we've been longing for a while.
A lot of it comes down to the ownership, too. I mean, look at the Colts. It seems like Jim Irsay, even though he hires the GM, he still tries to control the rest of the team, overstepping Chris Ballard or just telling Ballard what to do. And Ballard, I think, listens to Irsay too much or lets him do too much. He just needs to tell him to get out of his office and leave the control of the team to him, not Jim. And yeah, I think that building a team, it's more the ownership has a lot of say in it, and I think it's too much. I mean, look at the Cowboys this year. We were all slating them to be NFC East champions at the beginning of the season, and they've fallen apart so far. I mean, take out what you want. Take out the Zeke stuff that's going on, but look at the rest of what's going on in Dallas. They're just not playing well. Jerry Jones is not a horrible GM, but he's not good.
No, I'd say he's not that great. Steven Jones got in there and said, don't draft Johnny Manziel over Zach Martin, and what could have happened there? I mean, I think Jerry Jones is awful, and how he's in the Hall of Fame, what, because he did some nice business moves? Give me a break. Then put him in the Wall Street Hall of Fame. What's
exactly
he doing in Canton, Ohio? That's a joke. They're devaluing Hall of Fames. I mean, I could point to one, and I think you guys know where I'm going. I could point to one that they have.
Ed DeBartolo deserved getting in the Hall, not Jerry Jones.
Yeah, way sooner than, Jerry Jones. It took him forever. I mean, I could point to one in Springfield, Massachusetts, where a certain owner just got in that, to me, had no business being in there. And you see it, I mean, unless a guy like Eddie DeBartolo, a guy like George Hellas, who helped found the league, you know, a Curly Lambeau, someone like that, it has to be a special circumstance. To me, if you're putting in a guy like Jerry Jones, that was just awful, that devalues the Hall of Fame.
It does.
And it's a shame, because why should he get to play against, or and a guy like Jimmy Johnson, who built that team for him, still can't get in there for whatever reason. I mean, I don't understand. It's the most ridiculous Hall of Fame I've seen. It took Chris Carter and Shannon Sharp, both first ballot Hall of Famers, forever to get in. Jerry Kramer is still not in. Packers lineman.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely absurd, some of these guys that aren't in the Hall of Fame. But a guy like Jerry Jones, an owner, not even a player, gets in. Complete. It's just trash. What's next? Goodell going to get in while he's still the sitting commissioner? I mean, and the wonderful job he's doing in the league?
Yeah, Bears fans have been waiting for a Super Bowl championship for a long time, but people forget how long the Cowboys have been waiting for another Super Bowl championship as well. Jerry's been riding on the coattails of Jimmy Johnson for a long time.
The Cowboys don't need another one, though. As long as Jerry is in control of that team, I don't want to see them go past the first round.
No, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. But as far as just the level of that brand, a lot of people compare that brand of the Cowboys to the Yankees, to the Lakers. They haven't got the victories to really
No, and they don't
really
deserve
be at that
it
level.
Either. I think Green Bay should be a more recognizable brand than the Cowboys, as should the Broncos, probably the Patriots.
Yeah, the Patriots have gotten up there.
Those brands should be more recognizable than the Cowboys. They're not America's team anymore.
He knows
they
how to market.
Been for a long time.
He doesn't know how to build a winner, but he knows how to market. That's for sure.
Yeah, he can market. He just can't win.
Yeah.
Well, up next, the three of us, the three wise men, if you will, are going to tell you how we're going to fix these lackluster situations in the city of Chicago. But first, an update with our man Joe.
Hey, at 6 p.m., this is Joe Kesnick with your SportsTownChicago.com update. In college football, top 25 today, another shootout in the Big 12. The number 15, Oklahoma State, outgunning number 21, Iowa State, 49-42. Number 13, Ohio State crushed number 12, Michigan State, 48-3. And number 10, Auburn, has gone close to final here. They're up 40-10 on Georgia, number 1 Georgia, in the fourth quarter, closing out on that game. So a huge win coming up for Auburn against the Georgia Bulldogs. Coming up as well at 7 p.m. tonight, third-ranked Fighting Irish take on 7th-ranked Miami Hurricanes. at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. The Bears are still holding up as a three-point favorite in their matchup with a banged-up Packers squad tomorrow afternoon at Soldier Field. Linebacker Danny Trevathan was held out of practice this week with a calf injury. Tight end Deion Sims was out with an illness, and cornerback Bryce Callahan was out with a knee injury. Center Cody Whitehair was a full participant after injuring his elbow versus the Saints. Tight end Ben Broniker was elevated to the practice squad after tight end Zach Miller was placed on IR. In the NBA, Chicago has been named the host for the 2020 All-Star Game. The Bulls fell to the Pacers last night, 105-87. The Bulls fall to 2-8 on the season. The Windy City Bulls take on the Fort Wayne Mad Ants at the Sears Center in Hoffman Estates tonight. Tickets can be purchased at WindyCityBulls.com. With your SportsTownChicago.com update, I'm Joe Kesnick.
How fitting that we have Toto with Africa as we sent one of the wise men out of here. Bernie Goh and Joe Kesnick and Andrew Johnson decided to skip out on us. So it's just now the two wise men telling you how we're going to fix the situations in the city of Chicago. Which one would you like to start with first, Joe? Dealer's choice.
As we're moving towards the Windy City Bulls game, I think we can start with the big Bulls. We touched on the Bears a little bit and there are many issues, but jumping over to the Bulls, we can get on that. I know you have some takes on them as well.
Yeah, for me, it's simple. I mean, to put it blunt, you're going to have an ownership change. So I guess I'll play the part of being the owner who's coming there and change it. You have to clean house enough. If you want to rebuild this thing, which we both agree you have to do in earnest, it start, as we say, leadership, organizational strength starts at the top. You need to find a basketball mind. I go straight to the team that's got the best success right now, and I go to the Golden State Warriors, and I knock on Jerry West's door, and I go, Jerry West, here's a blank check. Write in there what you want. You don't have to necessarily take this over, but find me the next great mind in the league, the next Bob Myers, if you'll, who is the GM. Heck, maybe I'd go after and find a David Griffin, you know, who – if that's who he feels is the right person, who did a great job dealing with that ego of LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And you, I mean, the draft is of the uttermost importance in the NBA because you basically have one round to get it right. The second round is a throwaway round, and you need to hit the ground running, you know, scout Europe, scout the foreign leagues, scout, like, potentially somebody on a G League roster you feel like that can make your team, and you need to find the right coach, which I believe they did have that. They let that person go. Find the next one out there, you know, who you would feel it may be. I definitely don't think it's a Fred Hoiberg, and you got to hope to hit on that once-in-a-generational player that the Bulls did have, the greatest of all time, and we're still waiting to find someone at least adequate. We thought it was Derrick Rose, but unfortunately injuries and a lack of desire, I think, hurt them there.
Who does Jerry put in charge of that search, though, as far as finding new
– Oh, Jerry West. I'm saying no, Jerry West, you're in charge
you
of
look, finding – You look at Jerry West. Is he committed to the Warriors, or would he do that for the – you meant specifically Jerry West.
Yeah.
Seek him out on that, the advisory on that. It's an industry choice for sure, finding that next talent of who can lead the Bulls in the right direction. What do you think of Michael searching that person out, of Michael Reinsdorf being in charge of that? I feel like Jerry is a little bit hands-off. It's complacency that leads him to consistently keep Garland Packs year in, year out. Is there some complacency there of just going with the status quo?
I mean, I don't know enough about Michael Reinsdorf, I guess, and that's the unfortunate thing. When you get an owner, it is that unknown. You right. don't know what's going to happen. I'm sure the Redskin fans had no idea what they were going to get when Daniel Snyder walked in the door.
Right.
I would say, like, you could have – all the talk was that Peter Wirtz, who was supposed to take over the Blackhawks, was just like his father, Bill. And that would have been horrible. We'd still be in the dark ages there with that other team at the Madhouse on Madison. Again, I would say I just want – I don't want that name anymore. Unfortunately, sometimes names do sell you that reputation you have. I mean, the same goes for Steven Jones. I don't know if I necessarily would want him running that franchise into the future. I mean – Cub fans will remember years and years and years ago that they had William Wrigley, who at least, you know, cared about the product. When his son, Philip Knight Wrigley, took over, it was terrible. The guy was probably the worst owner in the history of sports. Things like the College of Coaches, the refusal to play the night games, just the utter mitigatedness to be just completely cheap, to interfere when you didn't need to interfere there, to stick by managers when you didn't. I mean, he did about everything wrong you could do, letting the minor leagues dictate when you would get players instead of vice versa. So, I mean, an owner like that, I mean, when you get the Sun, sometimes it's not always the best thing. We see in Arizona, Michael Bidwell looks like he is different than a Josh Bidwell. So, I don't know. I mean, not that I don't want to give Michael necessarily a shot, but I would want somebody else probably to come in there with that.
Yeah, you only have to look at the north side to see what great general manager leadership can do to an organization, completely change the culture around. You bring in a Hall of Famer like Epstein. He completely changes the whole outlook of the team. He's finding talent where other guys are not finding talent. He's making trades that other people are not seeing. When you've got that special leadership, you know, you look at the Celtics with the moves they're able to make that some people might not be seeing, that they make moves. They're playing chess, other people are playing checkers, and that's what you've got to do to rise up to that level and really excel in the NBA, the Spurs, the Thunder. You need a leader that's ready to do that and not just a middling leader that's going to get you to 7 or 8, and then you pop up and get a great draft pick, and then you're up there with a Rose or whoever they would get this year. That's any general manager can do that, draft well early in the draft. Can you find it year after year? Can you make the moves outside of the draft to be a contender?
Now, moving from the west to the east side, we look at the Chicago Bears. Same thing here. To me, it points to one thing, and you may know this story. George Halas, who was the founder of the Chicago Bears, was set to change the franchise over to his son, George Halas Jr., nicknamed Muggs, and unfortunately, he passed away. George stepped back in and took over. Eventually, when George passed away, it fell into the hands of Virginia, mm-hmm. who was a hands-off owner, but she put her football brain-dead son in charge, Michael McCaskey. Nobody needs right. to remember what no. happened there.
We're going to go back there.
And then, finally, he got kicked into timeout by his mommy, made the chairman of the board when he screwed up the Dave McGinnis potential hiring with the Chicago Bears, and they ended up going with Dick Geron. Finally, he stepped away for good, and George McCaskey took over. George Halas McCaskey, if you will, took over the team. Now, the one thing I like is that he's not – a guy who just sits around on his hands. The problem is I don't know if he's necessarily the guy who can find that next football mind. He relied, from what it sounds like, on Ted Phillips a lot, who's the one who hired Jerry Angelo, and then the just disaster that was Phil Emery. And
who's now, a business manager. Yeah, Ted Phillips.
That was the problem. When everybody said after the just disaster, if you will, that was 2014, everybody said, okay, you got to fire Mel Tucker. I'm like, okay, what's that going to do? He needs to go, but yeah, okay, you need to fire Mark Trestman. I'm like, it doesn't just start there.
No.
Okay, Phil Emery. I'm like, no, you need to go here. If George McCaskey needs to step to the mic and say, Ted Phillips, you're the Crane Kenny now of the Bears. You're over there. I don't want to hear from you unless it's something to do about business. You do not get to hire the next football mind. He never said that. Ted Phillips still has a say in that, and that's unfortunate. I don't even think Ted Phillips wants a say in that.
No, I agree.
George McCaskey needs to be the one making that call, and they need to. They had Ernie Accorsi, and they settled. They came in there. They settled on Ryan Pace, and I say settle because I think they should have gone after a Bell, or they should have gone after Osborne. I think it was Chris Osborne, I believe it was, with the Baltimore Ravens, someone like that. Or like I said, they need to go to a Bill Polian. They need to go to maybe a Ron Wolf and bring, as I said, like a Jerry West, bring them in there and say, you pick the next great football mind. You'll get a ring, hopefully, when this all works out. Who's that next football mind? You let them be in charge. You let them bring their coach in and go from there. Maybe it's a John Gruden. But to me, you need a guy who's had experience and, most importantly, success. Now, John Fox had that, but I think the game maybe passed him a little by too much. You need to look at a guy like a John Gruden. Sean Payton possibly could be available. Somebody like that, because they – until John Fox, I don't know if you knew this, outside of when George Halas would rehire himself, with the exception when they hired Patty Driscoll, the Bears never hired an experienced NFL head coach. It was always somebody who was an assistant or even a collegiate
right.
coach.
Yeah, no, that's been the move they've made, repeated hiring coordinators, rising them up, and seeing what they can do. I think a different approach can definitely help with that. Whether Gruden can be coaxed out of his TV job, I don't know. He seems pretty cushy with that right now. it's interesting who they can find. What do you think of a name like Harbaugh? Do you think he can be lured away from Michigan in the years coming up?
I think he could. I'm not sold on Jim Harbaugh because I look at Michigan, and year three they say is your year. I look at a Michigan team that gets pushed around on the field. I see a guy that I don't think is getting it done there when everybody, including me, thought he'd have this team by now definitely in the top four discussion. They've not proven to be that. They always keep losing their big games. Now, I think he did one terrific job with the San Francisco 49ers. I place 95% of the blame on that on Trent Baalke, a guy who couldn't get out of his way. Okay, Baalke drafted these players. That's great. But who got them going? It was Jim Harbaugh. It was kind of the John Paxson, Gar Foreman thing with me with Tom Thibodeau. Who got them performing on the field, on the court? That was Jim Harbaugh. I just think he's a guy that if they were to win, he would turn into the next Mike Ditka because he's a hothead too, and it would be all about him. Like what happened with Ozzie Guillen. I think, quite frankly, we're seeing a little bit with that with Joe Maddon as well. You win in Chicago. It's a special place. You're treated like a god if you win in any of those five teams. And they kind of make it about themselves. They become bigger than the team, and that's disaster. You can't do that.
Harbaugh's a huge personality. He doesn't hold back. But you see what he did. I mean, rising up San Diego to Stanford to the 49ers. He was going to the next level and taking that team to the next level as he went there. He did that with Michigan early. They seem to be turning the corner. They've taken a step back this year. I'm not ready to write him off yet. I think he can still continue to build them. But whether or not he has that draw to go back to the Bears, whether that be appealing to him with a young quarterback, guiding a young quarterback, that similar relationship he had with Luck. I know Andrew's brought up Andrew Luck a little bit about him rejoining together with him in Indianapolis. It's interesting. It seems like he might have that draw to come back to the NFL. He's got that competitive fire that he might want to be at the highest level. Again, the Bears might be an interesting job to him. It seems like Fox is on his way out. Back to that with Fox, too. We talked about that, the lame duck approach. I don't have a problem with sending him in to a fourth year. A lot of people are talking about you got to re-up him or not. I think you can still do a little bit of a search, find the right guy with Fox going into the last year of his contract. I don't think you need to force that search this season.
No, absolutely not. To me, is John Fox going to turn down $5 million next year? Because it would take him saying no. I don't think he's going to do that.
No.
He knows what's happening. He knows this year he's probably coaching for his future. That's why I believe, again, I have no sources, nothing like of that nature. I believe John Fox from day one, after he watched that Denver Broncos game, wanted to put Mitchell Trubisky out there. That's just my own take. He wanted to put Mitchell Trubisky out there, and it came from upstairs when they said no. And to me, I don't know how a guy could coach like that where they're saying, okay, here's this nice toy.
They're dictating.
You just get to look at it. And by the way, if you don't win with Mike Glennon, which we all knew he wasn't going to, and he didn't, he was 1-3, a lucky win against the Steelers at that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he wanted to put – and he definitely wanted to put him in there after that Tampa game, and they still said no. Finally, his performance, his utter lack of that against the Packers and another loss to the Packers that now puts them behind in that series, the McCaskies take notice of that. George McCaskey hates losing to the Packers. He's on record saying that he wanted to clean house after that just blowout performance on that Sunday night game where we all still have nightmares.
Like a Madden video game.
So they want him out of there – they wanted him in there and said, you know what, we need – if you feel Mitchell's the best option, put him out there. And they've done that. The least I could say, it's not as bad as what was in front of him, and that was Mike Glennon. Yeah, as far as John Fox goes, I believe he needs to, you know, open it up a little bit. We'll see if he does that. We need to see it this week. He's coaching this game. He needs to win this game, as we've mentioned, to do that. But, again, I have no problem with it. Lame duck coach, he knows that. He's, again, coaching for him. He's coaching this year to not get fired next year. So I don't think he'd have an issue with that. He knows how the business goes.
Yeah.
This is maybe his last stop. And if he wins, he knows he's a god. And if he doesn't, well, you got a nice paycheck to try and help turn around the franchise that was just in utter chaos, an embarrassing level at that, at the end of the 2014 season.
He's been in the league a long time. He knows how the business works. He was a tremendous coordinator, which raised him up to being a head coach. Built a great defense with the Panthers. Built a strong defense in Denver. He built a strong defense here. He knows how to do it. I can see him going back to a coordinator position and maybe riding out his career in that mode. He knows how to build defense. We've seen that in Chicago. They have that piece in place. It's about finding the pieces on offense now.
Well, looking around the NFL as well, staying on a football theme, right now, who would you say, is it as easy as it looks, who is your best team in the NFL? To me, it's the Philadelphia Eagles. I believe that Carson Wentz has shown to be possibly that real deal, at least so far this season. I think that Doug Peterson's done one incredible job coaching this franchise. And let's face it, Philadelphia fans love him or hate him. Most people hate him. They kind of need this. The Phillies are arguably the worst team in baseball. The Sixers are arguably the worst team in basketball. And the Flyers aren't all that hot. They need something. And you could say it this, a very passionate sports town. And we know what it's like to be on the bad end of some just awfulness.
Yeah, it's been a bad run in Philly. It's nice to see Wentz doing well from a small school. He's really been the cream of the crop of the young quarterbacks right now, going beyond Winston, going on. I mean, Mariota's even dropped off a good bit, too. Another guy the Bears had a shot at drafting. You look at missing on Deshaun Watson. You had a chance to get Wentz, too, and he's played beautifully this year. He's taken them to another level, just dominating in the NFC. So they're a great team this year. They're playing well. As far as who's right behind them and really looking at getting in to the Super Bowl as well, you got to still look at the Pats. I think I'm trying to think who's really taking the next step. It's a pretty middling year this year. A lot of teams that are at that 8-8 level. It's tough to see who's really rising up other than the Eagles right now.
This is the most wide open. They say it all the time. The NFL is just loaded with, you know, they call it parity. I call it mediocrity. This year is totally mediocrity. For me, I don't bet against the New England Patriots. In the AFC, I still think that's the team. I'm so tired of hearing about the Pittsburgh Steelers, folks. The next time Ben Roethlisberger wins an important road game, I guess we've gotten in a time machine and going back to 2005, right? I mean, they cannot play against New England. They proved that last year. That was their chance last year. It looked like New England was there for the taking. They had just gotten out of surviving the Texans game, where Tom Brady had two interceptions and won by 18 because they had no other quarterback on the other side. The Steelers went in there and just got railroaded. And right now, as you see, they're number three in the power rankings. The Steelers, to me, they're like the Oklahoma Sooners of the NFL.
Yeah.
They are out there. They win some games. People get all excited about them. Let's keep in mind, they lost to Mike Glennon, folks. The Pittsburgh Steelers lost to Mike Glennon. I have no issue with the Rams being two. They're surprising people. The same thing I would say, be caution about the Eagles as well. Guys making their first run through the playoffs. There's only so many Tom Brady's, who, by the way, they should have lost. That was a fumble in that game. Let's not get started on that, but that was a fumble in that game. Most guys don't go with no playoff experience at all, lead their team to victory. But this would be the year to me, especially if you have home field advantage. Who really wants to play in Philadelphia in that time of year? I don't think they do. But kudos to the Rams and Eagles, two teams that, especially in the case of the Los Angeles Rams, nobody expected to be this successful.
Right, yeah. Going back to the Steelers, any excitement the Steelers fans are gaining as the season goes on, they're going to be looking back at that Bears game. Like, are we really this good losing the Bears and Mike Glennon? They've got to question what they're going to do in the playoffs based off that game alone. But, yeah, you look at the Eagles and the Rams, two coaches being creative. There's a lot of criticism that came remind me of the Eagles coach again.
Doug Peterson.
When he came into the league, there's a lot of criticism around him about what he could do, people questioning what he could do, and he's taking them to the top of the NFL. The Saints, surprising. Breeze having a little bit of a resurgence, and Peyton as well. So is Peyton going to go anywhere? Is he finding a new beginning with the Saints to stick in there for the long haul?
Yeah, I don't think, because by all accounts, Tom Benson just loves the man.
Yeah.
And why not? I mean, he brought a Super Bowl to that franchise. People forgot because they won recently, and they've had success under Peyton and Breeze. Other than a little bit of with Jim Moore, and they never won a playoff game, and that amazing shocker that Jim Haslett pulled off against the greatest show on turf with his team, Aaron Brooks, Joe Horn, Deuce McAllister. Outside of that, it was nothing. And this team was a vagabond franchise that, you know, because of that disaster and Hurricane Katrina that wiped out the Superdome, this team, they thought they might be going to San Antonio.
Right.
Here came Sean Payton. Here came Drew Brees, cast away by the now Los Angeles Chargers, the San Diego Chargers then. For Phillip Rivers, I bet they'd like to have that one back.
Absolutely.
Dean Spanos and company. Wouldn't you love to have that one back?
The choice of those two. Yeah, it was the wrong choice that they made out in San Diego. They lost their city due to that choice, it seems.
And they survived the second pick overall in taking Reggie Bush. And remember, everybody said, How can the Houston Texans pass on Reggie Bush? They took Mario Williams, who had a nice career with the Texans. And then Reggie Bush, that USC guy's kind of didn't make it. You know, Matt Leinart, you know, partied his way out of the league. Jay Cutler ended up having the most success of a quarterback, and a lot of people aren't too happy about that.
Absolutely.
And you had Vince Young, who had one nice year, and then after that, boy, he fell apart. It's interesting to see what's going to happen. But if this is the year, the NFC to me is completely wide open, and I cringe to think about this. If the Packers just stay afloat and Rodgers comes back, they very well can go back to the Super Bowl just because I don't know who's going to stop them. I don't believe in the Cowboys. The Seahawks now with losing Sherman, I didn't believe in them before. I believe in them less now.
Yeah.
The Cardinals are shot. They're done. I mean, the Eagles and Rams have second-year quarterbacks. It would be their first time in the playoffs. Do you trust the Vikings now? Sam Bradford's been IR'd. I mean, do you trust the Panthers not to have a meltdown? You know, Atlanta to not have another meltdown? I mean, the Saints are old and stuff. I mean, that NFC, who do you love in that NFC? And to me, same in the AFC. It's just I trust New England to figure out a way to be the last one standing somehow in that conference again.
Yeah, I don't know if I see the Vikings putting any space between anybody in the NFC North, even with how well they're playing with Keenum, whether they bring Bridgewater back. I don't know if they're really going to start creating distance to where the Packers, that same situation. And when the Bears put Rodgers out with the collarbone a couple years ago, I was living in Wisconsin. I was telling people, do not count this man out. They could hang in, and he could be back, and they could still make a run. I say the same thing this year. He's going to work to try to get his way back. They could still be in the mix when he comes back, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of distance built in the NFC North.
Well, as they say, nothing is a sure thing, and NFL football this season is about the most unsurest of sure things it is. Well, that will just about wrap it up here on the pre-game show, but before we head on here and head into our pregame show for the Windy City Bulls, one more update from my man, John Kesnick.
At 6:26, this is Joe Kesnick with your SportsTownChicago.com update. In college football, top 25 today, another shootout in the Big 12 with number 15, Oklahoma State, outgunning number 21, Iowa State, 49-42. Number 13, Ohio State crushed number 12, Michigan State, 48-3. And in a shocker down in Auburn, Auburn takes down Georgia, 40-17, shaking up the college football world. Coming up at 7, third-ranked Fighting Irish take on 7th-ranked Miami Hurricanes at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. The Bears are still holding as a 3-point favorite in their matchup with a banged-up Packers squad tomorrow at Soldier Field. Linebacker Danny Trevathan was held out of practice this week with a calf injury. Tight end Deion Sims is out with an illness, and cornerback Bryce Callahan was out with a knee injury. Center Cody Whitehair was a full participant after injuring his elbow versus Saints. Tight end Ben Broniker was elevated from the practice squad after tight end Zach Miller was placed on IR. In the NBA, Chicago is named the host for the 2020 All-Star Game. The Bulls fell to Indiana Pacers last night 105-87. The Bulls fall to 2-8 on the season. The Windy City Bulls take on the Fort Wayne Mad Ants at the Sears Center in Hoffman Estates tonight. Tickets can be purchased at WindyCityBulls.com. With your SportsTownChicago.com update, I'm Joe Kesnick.
And that will do it for our pre-game show. We'll be back in a flash with the pre-game show on the Windy City Bulls.